The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I should not have been treated like a thug walking through those hallways. I mean, the police themselves could have said, I'm sorry, we have to do this. Instead, it was very intimidating, and I'm over the PTSD part of it, but it was a little upsetting for a few days, honestly.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was Dr. John Littell, and we've got a story to share with you. He's been a great contributor over the years to the program, and of course, we'll go ahead and connect with him in a moment. He's been stripped of board certification over giving out ivermectin. Woo! All right, we'll talk about it with him coming up. It's there's a lot to get into in terms of health and much more. We'll also take a look at Vladimir Putin, his nuclear itch. That's actually the title of an article written by Dr. Paul Kengor, Putin's Nuclear Itch. I suggest you go ahead and read it. It's well worth the read, but he's going to be stopping by too. We'll talk to him in this hour. Before we change gears, I do want to just touch on this whole, on the Eucharist. We are in this year of Eucharistic revival. And St. Faustina, who I love, has had, you know, many, many encounters with the Eucharist. She had tremendous devotion to the Holy Eucharist. And, you know, she writes that herein is contained the whole spiritual good of the church. In fact, the Catechism re-echoes that. It's the source and summit of our faith. And she had many encounters with the Eucharistic Lord. I don't know whether you ever had one. Have you ever encountered a Eucharistic miracle? Have you ever had a profound experience after receiving the Eucharist? Maggie and I were just talking about it during the break. And I really believe Divine Mercy Sunday, it's the last Sunday of the octave of Easter. So, you know, we're still celebrating Easter. It's the final day. And it was on that day the Lord said the floodgates of his mercy are open, right, on that day. And he made great promises. If you go to confession, if you go to Mass, then all the temporal punishment due to your sin, you know, will be wiped away, you know, on that day after you receive the Eucharist and go to confession. And I had an experience. Maggie was just sharing hers with me during the break, and I'm like, that's almost like what I had. Yours said a little more profound, but Maggie, why don't you share that? This is the power of the Eucharist. They don't have to levitate. They don't have to bleed. They don't have to multiply. I mean, that's all great stuff to help unbelief. But sometimes we have these personal encounters with the Lord in the Eucharist that make it so real to us, so transforming. You said you fasted a lot, what, last Holy Week and leading up to Divine Mercy Sunday? What happened?
Yeah, well, I remember going to confession. I think it was the Saturday before Divine Mercy Sunday, and I decided to go to St. Stanislaus here in Chicago, which is the shrine of Divine Mercy here within just the Chicago area. And Father Anthony Bush is just a very holy man, wonderful, wonderful priest. He had such a wonderful homily that day that I remember it ringing in my head for weeks afterwards. But I had been fasting during Holy Week, and then I even did a little bit right before Divine Mercy Sunday. And that day, you know, I hadn't had anything, and I went to Mass, and I remember him placing the host on my tongue, and just this moment that almost seemed ethereal. Everything kind of seemed a little tingly, and everything just kind of like disappeared for a second, and then I was getting to my feet and walking back to my back to my pew.
I think that was the moment.
Yeah,
I think it's the moment that the promise of Divine Mercy took place. The promise, Maggie. I had a similar experience. Two experiences on Divine Mercy Sunday. One, when my wife and I we went to Mass, and we had gone to confession, received the Eucharist, were at Mass. I got lost in prayer. She did too. It's almost like time stopped. 3 hours went by, and we both looked at each other and were like, oh my gosh, what happened? I mean, 3 hours of sitting in a church pew in prayer. I mean, I entered a depth of prayer I probably never have entered before. But she had the same reaction. Normally, she'd be like, okay, let's go. Are you almost done? Or I'd say, hey, you ready? We both were totally smitten. But last Divine Mercy Sunday, I had a similar experience. When I received the Eucharist, I think I was at the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help, and I had to say, I had gone to confession, but when you receive the final part of that, I felt the same thing, like an infusion of grace throughout me, as though there was true, it's like a baptism. It's like a second baptism, you know? It was just, boom, it was unbelievable. So I really appreciate you sharing that, because I thought it was a personal thing that I was feeling, but you apparently had the same thing.
Well, and it's a beautiful thing. I had this realization last year, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but I thought, wow, we get given this every year. And so I thought, wow, I didn't know about this until my late 20s. Yeah. And I felt like the first time I went and took advantage of Divine Mercy Sunday and its promises, I mean, I was kind of unloading a lot of stuff, right? And now I'm like,
it's the time to do it.
Each year now I can go and it, you know, won't be quite as bad. And that's great. Wow, look at this mercy that we get given this every year.
I mean, think of all the sin. We'll have this conversation, I know, in the days ahead, because Dr. Littell's going to be joining us in a second here. But just think of the abortions, the adultery, the infidelities, the gossip, the lies, the theft, whatever the sin is, right? It's all wiped away, you know? So Divine Mercy Sunday is like a new day. It's like a birthday. So try to keep the slate clean throughout the next year. But to your point, you're right. Year after year, you can take advantage of this this extraordinary. That's why they call it an extraordinary promise of Divine Mercy. But Divine Mercy will be here before you know it. We'll talk much more about it. Hey, I want to talk about Dr. John Littell. You might know him. We've talked about HPV with him in the past. He's written books. We talked Gardasil and the vaccine. He has been an outspoken opponent, really, of masking during COVID. We've had him on for some debate over whether masks work or don't work. He's in family practice in Central Florida, and he's given a lot of good medical advice on the air about hormonal disruptions from artificial birth control, and he's written books. We've talked vasectomies. I mean, the litany goes on and on. His advice sometimes is contrary to the advice of the medical establishment and what they give. And as a result of it, he suffered. Over the last 3 years with COVID, he's been just one of those rare voices out there initially that was very contrarian to doctors who did not follow in step with Dr. Fauci or Dr. Birx's the world and what they were saying. In fact, he found that ivermectin and other simple medications were working for patients when there was early intervention, something which the medical community didn't like. So he said early on to it, I disagreed with him on this. I thought, well, masks have got to work, doctor. What are you talking about? Right? I remember thinking, how can you take that position? He said they weren't good, especially for our kids. And you know what? The evidence proved out, you know, subsequently, and I do my own mea culpa. He was absolutely right. He called the mRNA vaccine genetic manipulation and a grand experiment. Well, the medical establishment finally caught up with him. Last week, he received notification from the American Board of Family Medicine that they were stripping him of his certification. The reason they gave him had nothing to do with malpractice. There were no allegations at all in that 7-page letter that he was negligent or he harmed any of his patients. Instead, the only thing that they alleged is that he spoke out on social media against what the medical establishment was saying and that he hosted a conference with doctors who were doing the same thing. That was his crime. As a result of it, he's lost his board certification. If medicine's supposed to be a scientific pursuit as well as something that one practices as an art, then stripping him from speaking out goes against, I think, the very nature of medicine. He joins me today to share his story. Doctor, I was stunned when I heard what happened to you. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you, Drew, for your patience, too. I had a whole lot of people in my office Monday, and I'm just happy to be on the show with you all. And yeah, everything you've said is absolutely correct. The amazing thing is I get this letter. We had corresponded with the American Board of Family Medicine a year and a half ago when I had my first summit on COVID up here in Ocala, Florida. And they said, hey, you know, this is you're a misinformer. You have to stop. And we sent it back a point-by-point rebuttal of everything they said. And also my speakers, they're holding me accountable for what the other physicians, such as Robert Malone or Peter McCullough, or Ryan called all of them. And I'm like, well, since when can we have an open conversation? Well, we thought this was over and done with. And then I made some publicity, as you may recall, you and I talked about it, being the meeting at Sarasota Memorial Hospital a couple of weeks ago. And then things went viral. And then they sent out this letter, you know, just out of nowhere saying, as of March 16th, you're no longer board certified in the specialty of family medicine, but you can appeal. I got the letter on March 21st. It's just the quickest thing I've ever seen happen. where, you know, normally when you're dealing with licensing and certifications, there's some time to say, okay, you're going to have this period to rebut these issues. So we're, yes, they held me. They basically said, I do not have a First Amendment right to freedom of speech to ever question the safety or efficacy of a vaccine or any of these other protocols. And that is something that is fairly concerning and should be for everybody. It's tyrannical.
No, it's horrible. That's not the way medicine's supposed to operate. How do you ever advance in the practice of medicine? How do you make advances if there's only one voice and there's no dissent and there's no alternatives? I was shocked when I heard this story. I almost didn't believe it. I had to say to my one producer, am I reading this right? He really was stripped of his board certification? Now, I remember when you spoke before that hospital board in Sarasota about ivermectin, right, about the benefits of it, and police escorted you out. I mean, when that happened, I'm like, this is not America. That sounds like it's like China. It sounds like some fascist state. For those who may not know that story, maybe you can fill everyone in. Why were you in Sarasota? Why were you escorted out? And does this give you pause? These two events that happened to you, are you alone or are there other people, other physicians, who've encountered similar opposition?
Well, let me answer the first question most easily. There are many other physicians who face similar opposition. There's a young lady in Indianapolis who told me she didn't want to be public about it because she's afraid of people, of just being bombarded, frankly, with publicity. But she's been decertified. There's a doctor in Texas who's been decertified. Wow. There's a doctor in Maine who's been decertified. And then there's all the medical students I talk to every day that I teach who I won't be able to teach if I remain with my certification. That's actually behind a lot of this, is they know I cannot teach medical students without being board certified. I can still be a doctor in practice with my license, but the board certification allows me to do more things. But yeah, these medical students can't get into a residency program if they are caught on record saying anything critical of the vaccines. Wow. or even questioning the protocols. So we have lost, you know, we're stifling the younger students. Now, what happened in Sarasota is that I was able to speak out 2 to 3 weeks ago now. It's like a blur. And it was after I actually took my seat, and then the one board member stood up and said, or spoke out and said, you know, what these doctors are trying to do is correct. She was very supportive of the freedom of speech of doctors and also our concerns about how COVID patients were managed in that hospital at Sarasota Memorial and other hospitals around the country, with being isolated, denied ivermectin, given remdesivir, et cetera, with no alternatives, you know. And when she supported me, I had to leave to come back to Ocala. That's a 2-and-some-hour drive. So I went up to her, bent over, whispered in her ear, thank you for your support. It was at that time that the initial officer and then two very large police officers just said, you need to leave, and forced marched me through the hallways of the hospital.
Wow.
Said, get your keys, get in your car, get off the hospital premises. And it was beyond the pale. So they're arguing, Sarasota says, he posed a safety risk to the board members by violating the protocol of approaching and talking to a board member. You know, well, anyway, I don't think you've known me a few years, Drew. I don't think I'm a safety risk to anybody.
No, not
but
at all. It's crazy.
But it is what happened. And I went back a second time expecting them to apologize in some way, shape, or form. And they just told me, the chairman of the board said, you know, go back to Ocala. We don't need you in Sarasota. So this is the tyrannical behavior of the hospitals, how they isolated, denied sacraments to the patients, denied advocates in the rooms with patients. And you all, many of your readers, I still say, are suffering from PTSD, as I am as a physician, having seen what happened in 2021 especially. So now you fast forward to what this board is doing. Frankly, this whole 3 years has been such a blight on the medical profession, such a mark, that I believe people like myself who try to open the door and shed some light, you know what it's a lot like, Drew?
What?
It's a lot like the abortion issue. It's a lot like saying, hey, this is a baby that's deserving of so much respect. And it's just, and I'm saying the same thing about the patients in the hospitals. I'm saying, why didn't we do this? And they say, no, shut that door, Dr. Littell. We don't want to hear about it because we don't. We can't. We can't go back there.
Yeah.
So, you know, shut up and move on. And the way to shut me up is to strip me of my board certification.
Wow.
So we're fighting it. We have great lawyers lined up. I've got Andrew Schlafly, the son of Phyllis Schlafly, who's with the American Academy of Physicians and Surgeons. I've got Matt Staver, who's the head of the Liberty Council. I've got Jeff Childers, a lawyer in Gainesville. I spoke to over 100 lawyers in Atlanta on Saturday. They're all lining up.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Because this is not for me, Drew. This is for future generations of physicians who should be able to speak their minds and engage in scientific discourse.
Let me do this. Let me open the phones, too. If you've had an encounter similar to this, maybe you're a physician and you're finding, you know, similar encounters, I'd love to hear. Maybe a pharmacist, maybe nurses, somebody in the medical field. What are you encountering? What kind of opposition, what kind of discrimination, what kind of heavy hand have you encountered? You can get in now. I have Dr. Littell, maybe 10 minutes at the very most. So you can call 888-914-9149. I'd love to hear from you. 888-914-9149. When you got into medicine, doctor, you probably never envisioned this type of behavior coming from the administration. I have a friend of mine who... he's a surgeon, and he just showed me a graph of what it was like when he got into medicine, how many physicians and surgeons to administrators, and now the administrators are off the chart. I mean, they so outproportionally outweigh physicians, it makes your job very, very difficult. What's the future of medicine, in your opinion, if we continue on that trajectory?
Well, thank you for pointing out about the administration to physician ratio, and also how many physicians are now owned by the administrators
right.
of hospitals.
Exactly.
Owned. And, you know, but there is, I wanted to refer your readers to, before I wrote The Hidden Truth, there was a book called Physicians Healed by One More Soul, which you did refer to years when we used to talk about, and it's still, just you can get it, just Google it. And my story is in there about how the administrators in Montana and Michigan, because I was a pro-life Christian doctor, ran me out of those two towns. And then I came to Kissimmee, recruited to Kissimmee, Florida in 97 because I was a pro-life Christian, and I joined the most amazing practice here in outside of Orlando, and eventually made my way to Ocala. So I've had a track record with these hospital administrators who want their doctors to be lockstep with them, which is one hospital administrator across the street from me right now said at a meeting, they use that term, lockstep with us. So you know, I am concerned mostly that we have weeded out physicians of conscience in medicine, because if you're a pro-life doctor who wants to become an obstetrician and not ride for birth control pills, you cannot get into a residency in OBGYN. If you don't support abortion as essential health care, the American College of OBGYN will not allow you into their ranks, just like the Democratic Party won't if you're not pro-abortion. You have a problem with admissions to medical schools right now where they are completely – if you didn't want to get the vaccine and subject to vaccine mandates as a young woman with fertility, hopefully, in her, you know, she wants to have babies, and they're telling her to take this unproven, untested vaccine, unproven, untested in women of reproductive age. All right. So I'm just saying what we're seeing in medicine, they've basically been setting this up for decades, but in this last few years, it's much worse. I hate to be such a downer, but we have got to find a way to get people with the courage of their convictions into medicine.
I was last week when I was on the air, I saw a report that came out, and the American Association of Medical Colleges is, you know, they're concerned because they say the U.S. faces a shortage up to about 124,000 physicians, 124,000 by the year 2034. And what they're seeing is a lot of these kids that are going into to medicine now, they're bypassing emergency medicine, family physicians like yourself. They're at the bottom of the list. People are going into plastic surgery, orthopedics, heart surgery, dermatology, things along those lines.
Yeah.
But the emergency departments, they're struggling right now to find enough residents.
This is the first year. You're right. This is the first year they didn't meet their match in the ER, and also family medicine is still wide open. Well, it's a tough road to hoe, and it's a vocation. But if you're really called to do it, called by God to be a doctor for the whole family. But I'm telling you, the way these medical schools have biased their admissions process against physicians or pre-med students of conscience is the major concern. They can complain all they want about the lack of doctors. You can look at the history. I can show you data on how they have discriminated against applicants to medical school for over a decade now. And that's very troubling.
Yeah, what's up with the ER? Did COVID drive these doctors away? There used to be a lot of ER openings in that field not too long ago. I thought it was very desired by young doctors. We're now seeing, you know, nobody wanted to become an ER doc. Is it because of what happened during COVID?
you wonder if there's a perception out there now that it's unsafe to be a doctor, because obviously everyone was masked up and quarantining. And, you know, to be an ER doctor, you're exposed to everything, you know, and you have to be willing to roll up your sleeves and just do the job. So I don't know. I can't speak. I was surprised, frankly, when I heard that. Because, you know, you would think that'd be an exciting place to be a doctor in emergency room. Now, I'm, you know, as a family doctor, I got to do a lot of, and I work as an ER physician in the Army. And afterwards, it's a cool place to be if you're up for the high intensity. You got to have the right makeup, though. You wonder sometimes, again, going back to who they select for medical schools, if they're getting people that really have what it takes to do that. I mean, they're getting some people into schools, but some of them are really into lifestyle and they want to just kick back and relax, you know.
Let's do this.
I see it, believe me.
We only have a few minutes. Let's grab a couple calls for you. 888-914-9149. Miguel is listening in Riverside, California. Hi, Miguel. You're on the air with Dr. John Littell.
Hi, Dr. John Lennon. God bless you guys. Yes, Doctor, you're going exactly through the same situation that many, many people who, when we do prayers in front of abortion clinics, we get harassed by the officers, but yet nothing is being done for all the vandalism being done on churches, religious places, and pro-life centers, women centers. So it's all the attack that's being done for all the against the life. And it's all, you know, it's the harassment against God himself.
Miguel, thank you. I'm going to hold you right there because I have a minute or two left. But, Doctor, your thoughts on Miguel's comments.
Just go to, if your leaders want to watch something, go to Mother Jones' article on me. Now, Mother Jones, liberal, made an incredible, accurate description of how pro-life people are considered to be the enemy as much as people who are against the vaccine.
Yeah, no kidding.
And they called me, they put me in there as an anti-abortion activist who's also anti-vax. So, yes, this is the same element at work attacking both pro-life forces and medical freedom.
Alan's got a question out of Minnesota for you, Doc, about why you call it a vaccine. Alan, good afternoon.
Hi, guys. I just heard earlier today they're still calling this an experimental use authorization thing. So, but you call it a vaccine, and it's not. As a doctor, you know it's not a vaccine.
Yep.
Can you explain that?
Yeah, no, it's not a vaccine. It's a messenger RNA. It's genetic engineering. It's injecting basically mRNA that was derived from fetal stem cell research, right? So aborted fetuses. So we've got all that issue. And the traditional vaccine was basically a weakened protein from whatever it was that we were fighting, and that they would put into our bodies, and we'd have a natural immune response. This mRNA is basically dictating, it's usurping our natural immune response and telling our body what to produce the spike protein. And then, you know, a traditional vaccine would have taken the element of the virus, a weakened part of the spike protein, and put it in our bodies. This is telling our nuclei and our cells to mass produce the spike protein in massive quantities with unmitigated production that we have no way of knowing what damage it could do to the reproductive organs or the heart or the nervous system or elsewhere. So you're absolutely right. I just call it a vaccine because that's what people hear. But in my chart, it's called an inoculation, an injection. It's called other things. But yeah, you're right. All it's right. Definitely not a
so
traditional.
It shouldn't be changed. Good, you're saying.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Well, more harm than good.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. I appreciate the call. Yeah, Doctor, you were one of those rare voices early on. Like I said, you called it. I actually thought you were off point with the mask. I'm thinking they've got to do something. But you were right about that. We're now seeing some of these other effects. Look, I hope things get resolved for you. I'm going to ask everyone to say a prayer because you are, I know you're a wonderful physician. You truly care about your patients. You're a good Catholic, and we're going to be praying for you in the days ahead. Just some final thoughts. What happens now, now that you're decertified, and how long before this gets corrected, I hope?
Well, I'll tell you, I've got a whole army of people praying. Like never before, there's rosary rallies. And please, pray not for me, pray as much as for the future of medicine for these medical students and residents. We are raising money. We have fundraising. There's a Twitter thing under with John Littell, MD, that's attached anyway. And the money is being used for the legal battle that I believe is going to go to the Supreme Court, that physicians in training should not be discriminated against because of their deeply held religious beliefs, and they should be allowed to engage in science. So pray that these legal proceedings are recognized as necessary and that they move forward. And honestly, I'm just so thankful for Relevant Radio for helping to get the truth out about this stuff.
That's what we try to do. At least I try to do that every day here. Thank you, Doctor, for your contribution over the months. We wish you the very best, and you'll get through this. I'm confident of it. But we'll talk again soon, okay? I'll let you get back to your patients. I appreciate you making time for us.
Appreciate it. God bless you and the gang. Be well. Bye-bye. All right,
God bless you. It's Dr. John Littell. My gratitude to everyone who's on hold. When we come back, I'm going to fill you in on the latest on what's being called Putin's nuclear itch. Hey, if you're in the market for health insurance, well, our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is here to help you and your family find the most cost-effective health plan. Learn more at relevantradio.com/forester.
Insight and analysis you won't find anywhere else. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining me. Hey, I got an email this morning from Dr. Paul Kengor, and a couple sentences. I'll share his email. He simply said, "This is not a good situation, period." I'd be happy to discuss. And I looked at the headline. Headline was from an article he wrote. It's called Putin's Nuclear Itch. The more he loses, the stronger he becomes. I thought it was a great title. It had got me, it's a very easy read, by the way, and we'll get you connected to it, too. You can go to spectator.org and find it. But Maggie already put it up on our Twitter page, and you can go to @DrewMarianiShow and find the link for it there if you're driving somewhere right now. But earlier in the broadcast, I was talking just a little bit about the Russian president and what he's planning to do. He's threatening to put tactical nuclear weapons in its neighbor satellite and client state of Belarus. And CNN was reporting that Putin told Russian state media that construction of a special storage facility for these tactical nukes in Belarus is going to be done by the beginning of July. So we're not that far away. He also transferred a short-range missile system that can be fitted with nuclear or conventional warheads. And Russia also helped Belarus convert 10 aircraft to make them capable of carrying these tactical nuclear warheads. And is going to start training pilots to fly the reconfigured planes early next month. This gives me pause. Pope Francis asked us again to rededicate and consecrate ourselves in that consecration we did a year ago to the Immaculate Heart. Our Lady has been saying, this is a time of conversion. Humanity's at a point of crossroads to pray. May this be a time of prayer for you. I believe in the grace of that consecration. I think it's going to bear fruit. But you know what? It's up to us to pray. In Fatima, Our Lady said, war is the fruit of sin. That's what it is. It's a result of sin. And she gave us weapons. She gave us the rosary, and she gave us, you know, Jesus gave us his chaplet. I think we need to pray more. We're not there yet. We got time. That's why I talk about this stuff, not to scare you, but to inspire you, to motivate you tonight and throughout the rest of your Lent, to pray for peace, to pray for the conversion of Russia, to pray for the conversion of China, to pray for the conversion of the United States of America, right? We need it just as much. Now, Putin, let me just lay this out very quickly, and Dr. Kengor will be on to explain it all. Putin is supposedly doing this because Britain is claiming it is going to give some, well, it's going to give some tank ammunition to Ukraine that uses depleted uranium shells as armor-piercing rounds. And they're standard rounds that Britain's been using for decades. But Putin's looking for a reason. He's getting his backside kicked right now. And in Dr. Kengor's article, he talks about how Russia always gets beat up in these types of wars. But he's got a pretty big weapon that he can unleash. And Dr. Kengor joins me today to kind of unpack what he sees now unfolding and why this is, as he put it to me in that email, not a good situation. Dr. Kengor, welcome back.
Yeah, hey, Drew. Yeah, thanks for having me back.
You know, first of all, I think that was a great piece you wrote, and I hope people will read it, Putin's Nuclear Itch. You warned about this before, though. I mean, this is not new. Does Putin need any excuse to put these nuclear weapons into Belarus? I mean, what's he looking for? Maybe, I mean, you laid it out in great detail in your article. I didn't want to take everything you've said there, but lay out the situation for us. Where are we right now? What is Vladimir Putin seeing? How's he feeling to what should have been a 48-hour war going on now for over a year?
Yeah, well, and like you too, Drew, I mean, I don't want to scare people. I don't want to be an alarmist, and I'm not trying to frighten people, but I'm trying to make people aware of what's going on. I think we could all still be in for a very nasty surprise. I've been, in terms of what Putin is capable of doing over there, and I've been doing your show for about 13 months since Putin invaded last February, 2022, talking about the situation in Ukraine. And since then, for over a year now, he's losing, because the Russians always do. The Russians always lose on the ground. Their military always does. And I think that the more he loses, the more desperate he becomes, the more of a threat he becomes. And he's been talking, you know, nuclear talk since November, even made an allusions at different levels on other things before that. And the very latest, so there were two kind of nuclear related things that happened in the past 7 days. About last week, it was disclosed that the Brits, the United Kingdom, was sending military aid to the Ukraine, like we are, Challenger 2 tanks, and they use a type of munition which is made up of uranium, depleted uranium, which means it's not radioactive, probably about as radioactive as the phone I'm calling you on. And the Brits even said, they said, look, Putin knows that this is not a nuclear weapon. This is not a nuclear device. We've used armor-piercing shells with depleted uranium for decades. We've always been using this. But Putin made this really grim statement talking about how now it looks like the West wants to fight down to the last Ukrainian, and that if they're going to introduce a nuclear component to this battle, well, we in Russia can respond accordingly. So I think the guy has been looking for a pretext, an excuse to be able to use nuclear weapons. And I think at some point he's going to grasp something like this. In fact, Hungary, which is a NATO member, Hungary responded on, it would have been Friday, maybe Saturday, Drew, and asked the UK not to provide these weapons, because Hungary realizes Putin's just itching for an excuse. He's looking for a reason. And as I say in my article, well, you really can't blame Britain. Putin's going to find his excuse wherever it is. I mean, he invaded Ukraine with the excuse that there was a Nazification that the Jewish leader Zelensky was pursuing in Ukraine. I did a piece for American Spectator about 2 weeks ago. It's linked to in the article about how the Russians were planning to partition Ukraine back in 2010. And that's no surprise, because Putin in April 2005 gave his speech, public speech, nationally televised speech to the Duma, the equivalent of their State of the Union speech, saying that the collapse of the Soviet Union was the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century. So Putin has been wanting to seize all of Ukraine since he first got into power. He can't get it. He's losing. He's desperate. And I think a desperate Putin is a very dangerous Putin. And yeah, I continue to fear that this guy could use a nuclear weapon or some sort of nuke. And if that happens, all hell could break loose. This is a very ugly, dangerous, troubling situation.
Whoever thought there would be war, right, in Eastern Europe? I never in my life thought we'd ever see a war like World War II or anything that would follow. And we're so intricately connected today, so relying on one another. Look how much, you know, fertilizer and grain comes out of Ukraine. Look at the fuel that Russia was providing to Germany and Europe. I mean, you take a look at all this, and yet we may see a much bigger conflict. I don't see
I don't see
an off ramp for Vladimir Putin right now. I mean, does he go home with his tail between his legs, or does he end it in a much more dramatic way?
I think the latter. And right now, I mean, he's got one of those two options, right? Put his tail between his legs and admit defeat, or lash out in some really dangerous way. And what happened just over the weekend, this is Saturday or Sunday, and you were referencing it, Putin announced that he's planning to put nuclear missiles in Belarus. in the next few months, like June or July. And Belarus is run by a thug, another thug named Lukashenko. Yeah. He's been in power there since 1994. After the breakup of the Soviet Union, it's a former Soviet state, and that's Putin's crony. It's his buddy. So you have the two worst dictators in all of Eastern Europe allying again. And people probably thinking Belarus, where's Belarus? Well, get out your maps, get out your globe, and look.
Yeah, right.
Belarus is smack between Poland and Russia, directly north of Belarus. Are the three Baltic states that are all members of NATO, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, in that order. And then if you go south of Belarus, guess what's there? Ukraine. All right, and let me repeat. On the other side of Belarus, two sides, is the landlocked country. Russia to the east, Poland to the west.
Yep.
Okay, so once again, Poland, right? Poland is part of this, and Poland's part of NATO. And you know, that's Putin's buddy. That's where he's going to place nuclear missiles. So I'm not trying to scare anyone. I'm not trying to be an alarmist. But I guess my takeaway for this, what I would advise relevant radio listeners, what can we all do?
Yep.
I don't know, other than, like you said, Drew, pray, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe that's our place.
Yep.
That's what we're supposed to do. We're not presidents and prime ministers and secretaries of state here. But we can pray for peace. Maybe pray to Our Lady of Fatima.
Amen.
But of course, she warned a long time ago that about Russia, and she said in 1917, she didn't say the Soviet Union, which didn't exist yet.
Right.
It came 5 years later. But she said Russia would spread its errors and sins around the world, right? There would be much to suffer. The Holy Father would have much to suffer. And I thought that a lot of this ended in 89, 91. That's what I've written in my books too, but I don't know. Maybe that old prophecy is not over.
Yeah.
Maybe aspects of that are still yet to come.
It's interesting because you're right. We saw the USSR spread its errors. What do we see today? We see Russia spreading her errors. So maybe that is the time for this message. Very interesting. One quick call, then I got to take a short break. Stan's in northern Nevada. Stan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, Dr. Kanger, I'm a big fan of yours. I've read all your books, and I served in the military for 30 years, including in Ukraine, in a program called the Partnership for Peace, where it was the Marshall Plan of the Cold War. We were supposed to help them build their prosperity, not their war things, and NATO wasn't the aim for Ukraine to be in there.
Right.
Having said that, I think that our government is just as much error as any other governments right now, because with this woke agenda, it's an atheist agenda, and they're pushing nuclear war. And part of me thinks that people should be writing their congressman, in addition to praying for peace, and we should be saying, let's clean up our own military, our own schools, and everything else, get that woke out of there, and start building a peace through strength force, which you brilliantly showed through your book, A Pope and a President.
Yeah.
This president, Reagan, was a humble president. He didn't win this war. He didn't help defeat the Soviets economically. He basically deferred with the Pope and worked to beat them spiritually. And Biden and these guys think this is an economic war for these resources.
Right.
And all I see is a renewed Germany with the economic, with the European Union. It's a united Germany that's spreading those errors.
Stan,
I see Poland as a spark.
And Stan, I got to take a quick pause. When we come back, let's pick it up and talk about it. I guess he brought up a great point, Doctor. And, of course, that's another great one of your books people can get connected to. If you want to join us, I'm in the home stretch here, only another 10 or 15 minutes left. My guest today, Dr. Paul Kangor. We're taking a look at Vladimir Putin and what could be an endgame. Dr. Kangor wrote an article called Putin's Nuclear Itch. You can find a link for it at Drew Mariani, at Drew Mariani Show, our Twitter page. It's well worth a read. We'll be right back. Hey, if you're in the market for health insurance, well, our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is here to help you and your family find the most cost-effective health plan. Learn more at relevantradio.com/Forester. Well, it is great to be with you today. Thank you for joining me. If you're just tuning in, Stan from Northern Nevada called in, and he was sharing his concern. He served in our military and used a word that Dr. Kengor and I were both struck by. He talked about Poland being a spark. And, you know, the Lord told St. Faustina, he says, I bear special love for Poland, and if she'll be obedient to my will, I will exalt her in might and holiness. And then he said this, from her will come forth the spark that will prepare the world for my final coming. That's diary entry 1732. The vice postulator for the cause of St. Faustina's canonization, beatification, Father Seraphim Mikalenko, he told me, look, Drew, he says, divine mercy, it's not just about chaplets or images. He says, this is a devotion to prepare the world for the Lord's second coming. And Father Seraphim expected it. I mean, how far off that is, nobody knows. We don't know the day or the hour, right? But that's an aspect of this message that is often brushed over. And yet he said to Faustina, you are the secretary of my mercy. I've chosen you to prepare the world for my return, for my final coming. So is Poland the place where that spark will take place? We saw the Solidarity movement there. Will the conversion of the world come from there? What will happen? What is this spark? Doctor, I'd love your take on this as well. You know that history better than most. It was a land of death. Poor Polish people have been constantly, their borders have changed. But, you know, we see from that great saints like Kolbe, and you've got John Paul II and Faustina and Divine Mercy. I'd love your take on all that.
Yeah, well, and you're an authority on Divine Mercy. I mean, you wrote the excellent book on the subject. And as soon as I heard Stan use the word spark, yeah, people couldn't hear us off air. But you said hello to me off air, and I said, Drew, look up spark, Divine Mercy, Poland. And you knew exactly what he was referring to. Yeah. And there's indeed that prophecy. And, you know, and Faustina's a saint. Right. And, you know, we take the words of our saints seriously. Did she have these revelations or not? Did she have these visitations or not? And if she did, and what she's saying there is true, then, you know, then Poland will be the spark to ignite the second coming. And so we don't know. We don't know the place or the hour. Now, she died in, I think it was October 1938, mm-hmm. Right,
yep.
Drew, I believe.
October 5th,
yeah. And that was 1 year, or I guess maybe 11 months to be exact, before Poland was invaded from the west by the Nazis, from the east by the Soviets. They carved it up, and in fact, it was in October 1939 that they surrendered. So that came a year later, and you know, it turned out that World War II wasn't the second coming. That wasn't Armageddon. And then Poland was occupied for almost 50 years by Soviet communists at that point. Poland then gave us a pope, John Paul II. And now here we are in 2023, and I don't know what's going to happen next, but I find it more than ironic that we're talking about Russia, Ukraine, Belarus, yeah, Poland, yeah, you know, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. And when she was having, I could be wrong on this, but I think, Drew, the Divine Mercy image and that whole thing when she went to the, as a nun, the convent, I think that would have been in Vilnius, which,
yes,
is in Lithuania.
That's where the image hangs,
right?
Today, the original, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's all in that area. That could possibly be where all this comes down to. Now, again, we don't
amazing.
Know, and I don't want to alarm people, but yeah, but you know, who knows? We'll wait and see.
Well, I love it. It makes you think, right? It really does. And I love the interweave,
yeah,
if you will, of the spiritual with the temporal here, with the reality that's now unfolding. Monica's in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Doc, she's got a comment for you. Maybe you can answer her question. Monica, good afternoon.
Sure. Hi, thank you so much. I think the station's amazing, and I just wanted to comment that I think it's wrong for Ukraine to confiscate Catholic property and put people in jail. And they're trying to eliminate religion, as well as in Israel, they're starting to jail. They want to jail anybody who talks about the Bible.
Monica, are you saying Ukraine or Russia's doing that?
I'm saying Ukraine.
Okay.
And I am saying that Israel is doing the same thing because they feel the strength of Jesus Christ, and they want to nip it in the bud by not having that word spread.
Okay.
So I think that Russia is just trying to protect their borders, like we should be doing protecting our borders.
All right, let's talk about it because we only have a couple of minutes left. Doctor, a lot of people share her view about Russia being justified in going into Ukraine. The rest of the world doesn't necessarily see it that way. I love your thought on those who argue, hey, Russia is trying to protect its own sovereignty. NATO is getting a little too close. I'm not familiar at all with Ukraine imprisoning Catholic priests, but maybe you're in the know on that. I'd love to get your take.
This has been Putin's long-term plan since he came into office. And people could look at the previous piece that I wrote for the American Spectator on Putin's plan to partition the Ukraine. And in fact, this was talked about over there in 2000, just 2 weeks ago. That's what I wrote about. And that goes back to at least 2010. Zelensky came into power in 2019. So that this has been going on for years. When Putin said that the collapse of the Soviet Union was the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century, it means he wants to reunite as much of the old motherland as possible. He wants Ukraine for its resources. When we were talking in 2014 about him taking the Crimea, right, we thought he just wanted the Crimea. No, he wants all of the Ukraine. He wants all of Kiev. And Ukraine was an independent country that broke away from the Soviet Union in 1990-91 after suffering 70 years of hell under the Soviets, including forced starvation during Holodomor in the 1930s, when 5 to 10 million people out of a population of only 30 million starved to death against Stalin. They've been victimized by the Soviet Union and the Russians for a century. Praise God, they broke away and broke free and got independence in 1991. And this thug, trained in the KGB as a lieutenant colonel in the 1980s, Vladimir Putin, decided to go in and invade and attack them and kill their civilians, kill a country that was not invading Russia, doing nothing to Russia. And the whole world knows, or at least most people should, that he is the aggressor. And by the way, if Vladimir Putin were to die tomorrow, okay, Russia would pull out and all of this would end. All right, this is a campaign of one man, one dictator against a totally innocent population and its country. This is not Zelensky and the Ukrainians' fault.
All right, Monica, thank you. I only have about 2 minutes, so I'm going to move along. Peggy in Chicago, you got to make it quick. Good afternoon.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I think I've never been much of a fan of Our Lady, but I think she's right on target with this one. She said, pray. And I'm thinking, the thing is, the one thing that's going to change this balance of power is prayer.
Yeah. Amen to that. Peggy, I'm going to hold you there because I only have a minute. I'm going to give the doctor final thoughts. I'm grateful for your call. You're right. Fatima, she told us to pray the rosary. That's the prayer we should be praying. The chaplain of the Lord said to St. Faustina, the world will have no peace, he said, until the world turns with trust to my mercy. So we've been given these great prayers. We've got the Eucharist. Let's all do our part. Let's pray. Let's do penance. Let's ask God for his mercy and for his protection. We'll pray for conversion. Doctor, I've got the final moment all for you. And I'd like to let you have those final words.
Well, yeah, I just echo exactly that. So I would just say simply pray for peace. Now, however that may come about, right? And my prayer always, too, is for the second coming of Christ.
Amen.
And you know, I don't want to see it come in the form of a fireball, right? That annihilates people and kills people. I just simply pray for peace. You know, we're invoking these prophecies of Faustina and so forth because they're there,
yeah,
right? You can't ignore them. They're really striking. So I just tell people, pray your rosaries, Divine Mercy chaplets, pray for peace.
Well, Doctor, thank you. Keep up your good work. Look forward to your next article. You can check out Dr. Kengor's article at spectator.org, or there's a link for it. It'll take you right there on our Twitter page, @Drew Mariani Show. Until tomorrow, remember, God loves you, and so do I. Have a good day.